Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you're joining us today, you are already acutely aware that the fight against cancer has, well, it's irrevocably shifted.
It really has.
We are no longer operating under that, you know, that simplistic model of finding one gene mutation that causes the disease. We get it now. Cancer is less like a malfunctioning part and more like an entire self-sustaining ecosystem.
Yeah, a country that has built its own complex infrastructure for energy, defense, and self-governance. That analogy holds up perfectly.
And to disrupt this highly orchestrated system of survival, you can't just target a single point on the map.
You can't. You need a complete, integrated map of its internal autonomy, specifically its metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
If you can understand the tumor's energy flow, you understand its entire regulatory logic.
And that's precisely our mission today. The sources you sent us detail a truly monumental undertaking, a comprehensive analytical framework designed to map out the entire complex metabolic landscape of cancer across, what, 33 different tumor types?
That's right. And we're diving deep into the massive pan-cancer atlas they call the Oncometabolism GPS.
Oncometabolism GPS.
And the term GPS is not hyperbole here. This framework is designed to function as a guided positioning system for tumor metabolism. It abandons the static, one-dimensional lists of genes and pathways that used to dominate cancer biology.
So it's more than just a list.
Oh, much more. Instead, it positions every key metabolic signature within a precise, multidimensional coordinate space, molecular, phenotypic, immune, and clinical. The scale of this required a serious conceptual leap, and we're going to unpack exactly how this map reveals vulnerabilities we simply could not detect before.
Okay, let's unpack this core premise then. We know that cancer cells rewire their energy use. The famous Warburg effect is, you know, the most classical example. But what is this integrated axis that we're missing? Why does tumor metabolism require this level of complex, multidimensional mapping?
The problem, as the research clearly lays out, is that we have to treat cancer as a systems disease. Mm-hmm. It's defined by these coordinated hallmarks.
Mm-hmm.
And metabolic reprogramming, it goes far beyond merely feeding rapid proliferation.
Right. It's not just about getting the building blocks for new cells.
No, although it certainly covers those energetic and biosynthetic demands. What's really revolutionary here is the finding that metabolism actively modulates other critical hallmarks. It creates this inseparable link, this integrated axis, with immune evasion and resistance to regulated cell death, or RCD.
So the metabolism isn't just the fuel tank.
Not at all.
It's also the central switchboard for the immune cloaking device and the self-destruct mechanism override.
That's the perfect way to put it. Let's look at the connection points, starting with immune evasion. Tumors achieve immunosuppression by two primary metabolic routes: nutrient competition and toxic metabolite accumulation.
Okay.
Think of the tumor cell as a metabolic bully. They hoard essential resources, glucose, glutamine, certain amino acids, and they starve the local immune cells.
Especially T cells, I'd imagine.
Particularly T cells, which need those same nutrients to activate and launch an effective attack. So when they're starved, T cells become anergic or just functionally ineffective.
They're essentially creating a famine right in the middle of a war zone to weaken the attacking army.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they're creating a chemical warfare zone by accumulating these immunosuppressive metabolites.
Like lactate.
Lactate is the classic example, right? The end product of enhanced glycolysis.
Mm-hmm.
High lactate levels acidify the local environment, making it hostile to immune cell function. But there are others, like kynurenine, produced through tryptophan metabolism, which actively suppress T cell activity and promote immune tolerance. It's a metabolically orchestrated immune suppression.
And what about the other side of the axis, resistance to cell death? We've established that RCD is now a whole spectrum of mechanisms. It's not just classical apoptosis anymore. How does metabolism control that fate decision?
Well, resistance to cell death is fundamentally controlled by metabolic plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer cells adapt their metabolism to resist every known form of cell death. The research really emphasizes the newer metabolically driven forms of death.
Such as?
For instance, for apoptosis, which is iron-dependent lipid peroxidation. The cell's lipid metabolism and its ability to manage reactive oxygen species, its redox balance, are the two primary switches governing its susceptibility to ferroptosis.
And the sources also highlight these really new pathways like cupreptosis and disulfoptosis. What do they tell us about this metabolic dependence of cell fate?
They dramatically reinforce the argument. Cupreptosis is a novel form of cell death induced by copper accumulation. It targets metabolic enzymes in the mitochondria, particularly those in the TCA cycle.
So a cell's metabolic state makes it inherently more or less vulnerable to this.
Exactly. And similarly, disulfoptosis is driven by metabolic stress, where excess disulfide bond formation in the cytoplasm leads to cell death. That's heavily linked to cellular redox control and sulfur metabolism. So these metabolic adaptations, whether it's shifting glutamine dependence or remodeling lipids, are what allow the cancer cell to survive this ever-expanding array of death signals.
Wow.
Metabolism is truly the central regulatory hub linking survival, death, and immune escape programs.
So given that deep integration, what was the state of the art before ONC metabolism GPS? Why were traditional studies falling so short?
Traditional studies were almost always reductionist. They were looking at one layer at a time. A researcher might identify that, okay, a certain enzyme is upregulated or a specific microRNA is driving a pro-survival pathway, but that data point existed in isolation.
You knew what was happening, but not why it mattered.
Exactly. You didn't know why it mattered clinically or how it was connected to the immune response or to stemness.
So if I find high expression of enzyme X, I know it feeds proliferation. But I don't know if that high expression correlates with a hot or a cold immune tumor, or if it predicts poor survival in lung cancer, but maybe good survival in breast cancer.
That's the problem in a nutshell. The missing link was a systematic, integrative framework that could connect all these dimensions simultaneously. We lacked a structure to link the enzyme genes and their non-coding RNA regulators, the molecular machinery, to crucial clinical phenotypes like microsatellite instability, tumor mutational burden, and critically, tumor stemness, TSM. Yeah, you just cannot derive the functional clinical meaning of a metabolic shift without those coordinates.
Which brings us to the conceptual leap. The solution is the ONC metabolism GPS. How do we define this framework at a high level?
ONC metabolism GPS is a multi-omic analytical framework, and it's built to reconstruct a pan-cancer atlas of these metabolic regulatory circuitries. The GPS element signifies its role as a guided positioning system.
It's a positioning system.
It systematically positions every metabolic signature it finds within that full multidimensional landscape we just outlined. It gives it an address based on its molecular makeup, its phenotypic associations, its immune context, and its prognostic outcome. It's a navigational tool that provides a precise set of coordinates for vulnerability rather than just another list of targets.
That conceptual framework is crystal clear. Now let's talk about the heavy lifting required to build this map. You can't build a detailed map of a continent by looking through a keyhole. What was the sheer scale of the input space?
The foundation of this atlas is truly staggering. It spans data from 33 of the TCGA tumor types. They began by meticulously defining the molecular targets involved in metabolism. This meant retrieving 1,406 unique enzyme coding genes.
1,406.
Distributed across 127 known KAG metabolic pathways.
127 pathways, that's highly granular. To simplify navigation, how were these pathways categorized?
They were grouped into seven major metabolic domains: carbohydrates, lipids, amino acids, energy metabolism.
Things like the TCA cycle and oxidative phosphorylation.
Exactly. Then nucleotides, cofactors, and vitamins, and a final category for other amino acids. This provides the primary metabolic domain or function.
But as you noted, it's not just the enzymes, it's the regulators controlling them. How did they incorporate that massive landscape of non-coding RNAs?
This is a really critical point on rigor. They incorporated a vast regulatory environment, 2,490 microRNAs and 242 long non-coding RNAs.
And here's the key filter, right? They didn't just pull any potential regulator.
No, and this is key. They only included these non-coding RNAs if they had experimentally validated regulatory interactions. Pulling data from highly curated resources like Muterbase and AVLCRNA 3.0. This strict requirement ensures that they are mapping only the regulatory relationships that have been proven in the lab, which minimizes computational noise.
That's a crucial measure for the map's reliability. Now, let's talk genetic complexity. They didn't just look at genes, but transcript isoforms. For listeners, why is looking at splice variants so much more important than just the parent gene?
That technical detail is surprisingly critical. When a gene is expressed, it can be spliced into multiple different versions or isoforms. These 20,526 transcript isoform identifiers matter because different isoforms can have radically different functions.
How so?
Well, one isoform of an enzyme might be localized to the cell membrane, another might be sequestered in the nucleus, and a third could be directed toward the mitochondria. If you only measure the expression of the overall gene, you miss the crucial context of where and how that protein is actually functioning. Including isoforms captures the precise mechanism of metabolic control.
So the atlas captures the molecular input enzymes, non-coding regulators, and the specific functional version of the transcripts. How do they layer on the death mechanisms?
They established the RCD context right from the start by annotating 309 molecules known to be involved in specific regulated cell death mechanisms. This covers everything from apoptosis to the newer pathways like ferroptosis and coproptosis. It ensures that every metabolic gene is tagged by its potential role in cell fate.
Now, onto the omic landscape. They mapped this immense molecular input across 33 tumors using 7 distinct layers of data. Can you walk us through those layers and what each one uniquely contributes?
Of course. The 7 omic layers provide a holistic view of the tumor state. We have the foundational layers, bulk RNA gene expression, and protein expression, which tell us what is being made.
Okay, the basics.
Then you look at the regulatory layers, mRNA expression and transcript isoforms, revealing that post-transcriptional control. And finally, the structural and epigenetic layers. CpG methylation, the crucial epigenetic mechanism controlling gene silencing, copy number variation, or CNV, which is the large-scale gain or loss of genetic material.
Right.
And somatic mutation, or point mutations. Analyzing all 7 layers allows the framework to define signatures that could be rooted in epigenetic control, transcriptional regulation, or simple copy number changes.
That is just a staggering amount of data integration. You're asking a system to correlate epigenetic changes on a transcript isoform with a specific mRNA regulator and a clinical outcome. Let's talk scale again, because this is where the computational gauntlet truly begins.
I did. To establish the initial associations across all these layers and all 33 tumor types, the process involved approximately 2.94 million association tests.
Nearly 3 million.
3 million complex statistical trials run, just to see what correlates with what.
That requires some serious computational architecture. What was the outcome of that initial sweep?
It yielded 171,782 statistically significant associations. But a key insight into tumor complexity comes next. After annotating those initial associations with specific metabolic pathways and RCD mechanisms, the number expanded to 463,433 entries.
Why the jump? How does it expand?
That's the biological reality of multi-mapping. A single enzyme-coding gene or a single non-coding RNA isn't usually dedicated to one function. It often participates in multiple metabolic pathways and several different regulated cell death mechanisms simultaneously.
I see.
This expansion reflects the intrinsic multifunctionality of the metabolic landscape, a complexity that the GPS framework has to handle, not filter out.
I follow that logic. Now let's discuss the phenotypic axes. We're tracking MSI and TMB, but the sources keep pointing back to the importance of tumor stemness, TSM. What is TSM, and why did it dominate the results so much?
TSM is an index that reflects a tumor cell's plasticity and its self-renewal capacity, its stem-like properties. It is a marker of aggressiveness and adaptability. The GPS framework found that TSM contributed a massive 72.1% of all significant associations.
72%.
Far surpassing TMB and MSI.
That is a staggering majority. What does this deep correlation with TSM fundamentally tell us about metabolic vulnerabilities?
It tells us that metabolic reprogramming isn't just a byproduct of rapid growth. It is the defining feature of the aggressive stem-like properties of the tumor.
So if you want to find the bottleneck,
if you want to identify the metabolic bottleneck for aggression, you have to focus on the pathways that sustain stemness. It suggests that targeting the metabolic needs of that stem-like subpopulation is potentially more effective than targeting high mutational burden or proliferative capacity alone. TSM fundamentally shifts the priority from simple cell division to cell plasticity and survival.
That's a profound finding. Once these TSM-linked associations were identified, how did they define the immune context?
They classify the immune microenvironment based on the infiltration patterns of anti-tumor, pro-tumor, and dual-functional immune cells. For simplification, these were grouped into hot, cold, or variable immune phenotypes.
Hot being active T-cell infiltration, cold being immune suppressed or excluded.
Exactly.
And what did the analysis reveal about the final picture once everything was filtered for clinical relevance?
The analysis revealed a sobering but highly informative pattern. Even after filtering for associations that predicted long-term survival outcomes, OS, DSS, DFI, PFI, the cold immune profiles predominated.
How much?
They accounted for 81.9% of the prognostic associations.
Over 80%. That suggests that the metabolic changes that drive a poor prognosis are overwhelmingly designed to sustain immune evasion.
Precisely. The metabolic alterations that enable tumors to survive long-term are, by and large, the same ones that successfully sustain immune exclusion or suppression. The metabolism immune axis is dominated by the tumor's successful defense strategy.
So we have millions of correlations across all these layers, confirming this tight link between metabolism, stemness, and these cold immune environments. The next step is extracting structure. You can't navigate by looking at 460,000 data points. You need a map key. And that's where the omics-specific metabolic signature comes in. What is this core unit?
This signature is the central conceptual invention of the GPS system. It's a coherent molecular entity, and it's defined by extremely rigorous rules designed to enforce the integration we've been discussing. It moves us past simple correlation into functional coherence.
Let's delve into those rules. They sound like they are deliberately designed to filter out noise and only keep the robust multidimensional connections.
That's absolutely right. First, the signature has to be monoomic. All the elements must come from the same data layer. All genes, all isoforms, or all miRNAs, you aren't mixing data types within the unit.
Okay, one layer at a time.
Then it has to satisfy four hierarchical criteria for biological coherence.
Hit me with them one by one.
Criterion one, shared function. All elements within the signature must reside in the same KGG metabolic pathway and be annotated to the same metabolic RCD mechanism. If it's a lipid pathway signature, it also has to be linked to, say, fructosis liability.
Okay, shared function. Makes sense.
Criterion two, phenotypic concordance. They must show concordant associations with the tumor phenotypes MSI, TMB, and especially TSM.
Meaning the direction of the relationship has to be consistent.
Exactly. If one element correlates negatively with TSM, all others in that signature must also correlate negatively with TSM. They're all pulling the phenotypic state in the same direction.
Got it. Criterion three, prognostic consistency.
Yes. They have to show consistent prognostic directionality across all four survival endpoints we analyzed. Overall survival, disease-specific survival, disease-free interval, and progression-free interval.
That's a heavy lift. It forces the inclusion of only elements that are universally high-risk or universally protective across different clinical metrics.
It is. And finally, criterion four, immunological alignment. They must align with the same immune microenvironment class, hot, cold, or variable.
That is a powerful filter. We're defining a molecular entity where the metabolic function, the aggressiveness phenotype, the long-term clinical outcome, and the immune context all have to match up perfectly. It's essentially a metabolic state vector.
It is. And this rigorous process generated the full atlas. 241,415 distinct signatures across the 33 tumor types. This number represents the universe of robust, multidimensionally coherent metabolic states.
Let's talk about the composition of that universe. I was really surprised that standard gene expression was not the dominant layer.
It was one of the most significant findings, this non-traditional dominance. mRNA expression dominated, accounting for 42.4% of the signatures.
Almost half.
Then transcript isoforms were second at 27.2%. Standard gene expression was only 13.1%.
This speaks volumes about where the tumor is placing its primary regulatory control. Why are mRNAs and transcript isoforms so crucial in regulating these integrated states?
Because they provide exquisite, fine-tuned control over gene expression after transcription. mRNAs can quickly dampen or silence the expression of numerous target genes simultaneously. This allows the cell to rapidly shift its metabolic state without having to destroy or rebuild entire protein structures.
It's a faster, more agile control system.
Exactly. And similarly, transcript isoforms allow the cell to shift the functional location of an enzyme, as we discussed, without changing the total gene output. It means that the most common points of vulnerability are often these fast-acting, post-transcriptional, and splicing-based regulatory mechanisms.
And looking at the RCD context, where did the bulk of these 70,000 RCD-linked signatures fall?
There was a massive enrichment in two areas, which really underscores their metabolic dependence. Autophagy-dependent cell death at 41.3% and for apoptosis at 40.4%.
Autophagy, in simple terms, is the cellular recycling system. Why is its regulation so tied to metabolic death?
It's the ultimate survival mechanism. Autophagy allows the cell to eat its own components during nutrient stress to generate energy and raw materials. It's cellular cannibalism for survival.
Right.
But when autophagy gets dysregulated or hyperactivated, it can become a mechanism of cell death. The massive enrichment here shows that the tumor's ability to manage nutrient recycling is intimately linked to its ability to prevent its own self-destruction, particularly when it's faced with metabolic stress.
Let's ground this in a practical example to show the power of the signature concept. Let's look at the AKR1C1, AKR1C2 signature, which appeared across 9 different tumor types.
This is a superb illustration of pan-cancer coherence. This signature is part of lipid metabolism, involved in steroid hormone biosynthesis, but it's also a major player in the ferroptosis pathway. It showed up robustly in cancers as diverse as glioblastoma, kidney cancer, and lung adenocarcinoma.
What made it coherent across such different tissue types?
Its stability in relation to two of our four criteria. First, it consistently showed a positive association with the tumor stemness phenotype, TSM, across both the gene expression layer and the epigenetic layer.
Okay, so it's always linked to stemness.
And second, it consistently correlated with a cold immune microenvironment in every single cancer type where it appeared.
So if you see this AKR1C1, AKR1C2 signature, you immediately know you are dealing with a lipid-metabolizing, stem-like, cold tumor state.
Exactly. And in specific contexts, like prostate cancer, this signature was confirmed to link to adverse prognostic profiles across multiple survival endpoints. This single signature gives researchers a composite target that represents a functional, highly aggressive, and immune-evasive state, providing the full set of coordinates needed for rational drug design.
We have over 240,000 of these complex, coherent metabolic entities. To use this as a true GPS, we need a way to organize and precisely locate them. This is where the 13-token alphanumeric code, the core of the oncometabolism GPS, truly comes into play.
This code is the standardized coordinate system. They needed to move from a sprawling, chaotic metropolis of data points to an organized geography where every entity has an unambiguous standardized address. The 13-token code, which is an expansion of previous identification systems, acts like a sophisticated geospatial zip code for the metabolic signature.
Can we deconstruct the most critical elements of this license plate? It starts with the cancer type abbreviation and the unique signature identifier, but then we move into the biological coordinates.
Let's walk through the coordinates that matter most for defining the metabolic state.
Start with the metabolism itself.
We have MET and PATH. MET specifies the broad metabolic domain lipid amino acid nucleotide. PATH gives the precise KG pathway index. This is the biological street address.
Okay, and then we have the connection to cell fate.
That's the MCD token, metabolic cell death involvement. This tells you which specific RCD mechanism, ferroptosis, cuproptosis, apoptosis, etc., the signature's components are annotated to.
And let's look at the complexity tokens. We have three that define its phenotypic relationship and prognostic severity, OFC, SMC, and TNC.
Right. OSC confirms the correlation direction with key phenotypes like TSM. SMC tells you if the signature predicts a poor or good outcome based on the hazard ratio across all survival metrics. And TNC tells you if the signature is upregulated or downregulated compared to normal tissue. These tokens define the signature's character and clinical impact.
Crucially, we have the immune coordinates, TMC and TS.
TMC classifies the microenvironment, and TEC defines whether the signature is associated with a hot, cold, or variable immune pattern. For example, a code might read TIC.CATLD, immediately telling you that signature is immunologically silent.
And the final piece of the puzzle, and perhaps the most informative, is the regulatory control, RCC, the regulatory circuitry code. This classifies the signature as part of a convergent or divergent regulatory pair.
Absolutely. This is the core of the study's mechanistic insight. It defines the relationship between the metabolic target signature and its ncRNA regulator signature, so the miRNAs or lncRNAs.
Let's define a metabolic regulatory circuitry again. It's a pair of fully connected signatures, target and regulator, validated by molecular interaction. The RCC code determines whether their multidimensional profiles align or oppose one another.
Correct. A convergent circuitry means the regulator and the metabolic signature are perfectly aligned in their association directions across phenotype, prognosis, and immune context.
So they're pulling in the same direction.
Exactly. If the metabolic signature is cold, risky, and TSM positive, the regulator must also be cold, risky, and TSM positive. This signifies a highly stable, reinforced, often disease-driving program.
And divergent circuitry.
Divergence means the regulator and the signature show opposite association directions. The metabolic signature might be protective in terms of overall redox balance, but its regulator might be associated with a highly risky, hot immune environment. This implies regulatory compensation, adaptation, or a metabolic immune trade-off.
And the study found that divergent patterns were more common overall, right?
They were. It suggests that adaptation and compensation are the most common states of metabolic regulatory control in cancer. And the immune axis drove the highest proportion of these interactions, confirming that the immune microenvironment is where the regulatory battleground is most active.
Let's use the case studies to make this concrete. Start with the divergent circuitry example in low-grade glioma, LGG.
The LGG signature involves the lipid metabolism genes, FADS1 and SED, which links unsaturated fatty acid metabolism to the ferroptosis pathway.
And what was the metabolic signature's profile?
It was pro-tumor. It correlated positively with tumor stemness and was associated with a cold immune microenvironment. However, here's the divergence. It was linked to a protective prognostic effect.
Wait, a cold stem-like tumor that gives the patient better survival odds? That's completely counterintuitive.
It is. Now, look at the regulators, MER215-5P and MER155-5P. How did they behave?
Well, let me guess, the opposite.
The exact opposite direction across all metrics. They had negative correlations with TSM, were associated with a hot immune phenotype, and predicted a risky prognostic profile. Regulator is hot risky, the signature is cold protective.
That is the definition of a regulatory fault line. What does that metabolic immune trade-off mean functionally?
FADS1 and SCD are locked in a redox war. FADS1 promotes ferroptosis sensitivity by creating polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are easily oxidized. SCD converts those vulnerable fatty acids into more stable ones, thereby conferring ferroptosis resistance.
Okay.
The signature's protective effect comes from maintaining this critical redox balance, preventing the tumor from dying spontaneously via ferroptosis.
But the regulators of this balance are pushing the system toward instability.
Yes. The shared microRNA regulators are functionally known to activate immune responses, including T-cell cytotoxicity. Their activity is associated with a hot immune phenotype, which often indicates an aggressive, immune-reactive tumor state, hence the risky prognosis linked to the regulator.
So the divergence means the tumor's core metabolic adaptation is being actively controlled by regulators whose activity screams, "I am visible to the immune system."
Exactly. This is a profound vulnerability. If you disrupt the regulator, you may break the protective metabolic balance.
That dynamic opposition is fascinating. Now let's look at the stable reinforced aggression, the convergent circuitry in chromophobe renal cell carcinoma, KICH.
In KICH, we looked at an amino acid metabolism signature involving AK2 and HADH linked to branched-chain amino acid degradation. The signature's profile was negative TSM, cold immune microenvironment, and a risky prognostic effect.
A non-stem-like cold aggressive tumor. And the regulator, HSA-MIR-1243P, was perfectly aligned.
Perfectly. It showed the same directional behavior. Negative TSM correlation, cold immune phenotype, and an adverse prognostic profile. This convergence defines a stable aggressive program where the regulator is simply reinforcing the danger status quo.
And functionally, what are they reinforcing?
This convergence defines a robust mitochondrial immunosuppressive phenotype. ACT2 promotes the specific glycolytic epigenetic circuit, increasing lactate secretion and stimulating pro-tumor macrophages. HADH's reduced expression in these tumors correlates with poor outcomes and low infiltration of anti-tumor T cells.
So the coordinated reduction of this whole axis, reinforced by the aligned regulator, defines a tumor that is metabolically locked into an immunosuppressive aggressive state.
Exactly.
This highlights the difference in therapeutic approach. In divergence, you look for the weak spot in the trade-off. In convergence, you know you need a direct, powerful attack because the system is robustly stable.
We can also look at the pancreatic adenocarcinoma, or PAD, example involving transcript isoforms of ALDH71, a gene involved in fatty acid degradation and redox balance.
And how did the system converge?
The ALDH71 transcript isoform signature converged with a non-coding RNA regulatory signature made of two miRNAs, HSA-LUT7B5P and HSA-MIR-193B3P. Both the transcript signature and the miRNA signature showed consistent negative correlations with MSI, poor prognosis across all four survival metrics, and most importantly, a consistent cold immune pattern.
So it defines a stable transcriptional and post-transcriptional module that's sustaining this aggressive, immunosuppressed pancreatic cancer.
It does. The high expression of that specific ALDH7A1 isoform, unchecked by the loss of these tumor suppressor miRNAs, creates this aggression. ALDH7A1 is crucial for detoxifying lipidaldehydes under oxidative stress. High expression confers a redox energetic state that strongly favors tumor growth and actively hampers the anti-tumor immune response, often leading to an immune desert microenvironment.
So the convergence confirms that the loss of the post-transcriptional breaks, the tumor suppressor miRNAs, perfectly reinforces the metabolic shift, locking the tumor into its aggressive cold state.
That's right.
This entire atlas, built on the 13-token coordinate system, is now an operational tool. How do researchers access and navigate this map?
The entire framework is implemented in the Oncom Metabolism GPS Shiny application. It's an interactive web application that allows users to dynamically navigate this complex terrain.
So using that 13-token code, a user can precisely position and compare signatures.
Yes. They can input a gene, an isoform, or a regulatory non-coding RNA, and the tool provides the exact coordinate the full profile of the signature belongs to, its circuitry convergent or divergent, and how those molecular patterns align with the phenotypic, prognostic, and immune dimensions across all 33 tumor contexts.
It's incredible. It fundamentally shifts the research process from generating data to generating highly informed, testable hypotheses. We started with the realization that cancer is a self-sustaining system, and we needed a complete map to fight it. The Oncometabolism GPS has delivered that map, identifying over 240,000 highly structured metabolic signatures and classifying their regulatory architecture. Let's synthesize the two major mechanistic patterns this atlas revealed.
The patterns are really stability versus vulnerability. Convergent interactions like the ACE-COR2-VDH example in KACH denote maximum stability. The regulatory control and the metabolic dependency are perfectly aligned, reinforcing aggression. These are entrenched, robust systems that require strong, perhaps multi-pronged intervention.
And then the more therapeutically enticing pattern is divergent interactions, like the FADS1-SCD example in LGG.
Divergence exposes the adaptive fault lines. Here, the tumor's metabolic advantages, like maintaining that protective redox balance or enabling stemness, are regulated oppositely to the immune visibility or another critical liability, like ferroptosis dependence. These are the regulatory trade-offs that suggest clear entry points for therapeutic sensitization.
So the translational potential of this work lies in moving beyond just hitting one enzyme. It's about understanding the entire configuration of the signature.
Absolutely. This shifts the focus from single targets to designing strategies that target these reconfigurable regulatory landscapes.
Yeah.
If a signature is cold and risky, you know you need to pair a metabolic intervention with an immunotherapy to heat up the microenvironment.
Right.
If a signature is divergent, you can pair a metabolic rewiring intervention, say inhibiting SCD to induce ferroptosis, with an RCD-linked strategy that exploits that newly created liability. It's rational combination therapy guided by precise metabolic coordinates.
To maintain balance, we have to acknowledge the inherent limitations of any massive computational framework. What caveats did the researchers note?
Well, while the structure is robust, it still relies on correlations drawn from large data sets, not direct experimentally validated causation for every single connection. The structure allows us to generate strong hypotheses, but those functional links still require targeted experimental validation.
And it's bulk RNA-seq data.
That's the other major point. The reliance on bulk RNA-seq means that the data averages the signals across the entire tumor mass, including stromal cells and immune infiltrates.
Which means we might still be missing the precise metabolic states of those small, highly aggressive, stem-like subpopulations.
Precisely. Future work incorporating single-cell and spatial transcriptomics will be essential to validate these circuitries in their precise microenvironmental niches. This map provides the structure. Now we need to confirm the exact location on the ground.
As an expert who synthesizes this kind of comprehensive data, what is the final, most thought-provoking takeaway this work offers to the field of biology?
The true conceptual legacy of Oncometabolism GPS is its philosophical shift toward viewing biological systems in topological and relational terms. The signatures aren't just lists. They are geometric entities defined by their volume, which is their coherence, and their orientation, their directionality, within an n-dimensional molecular to clinical space.
That's a huge shift.
It is. This framework formalizes how biological systems maintain coherence and adapt under stress. It opens doors for new basic science questions about how vulnerability arises not from single failures, but from regulatory stress within a defined geometric configuration.
A biological zip code that defines the precise coordinates of cancer vulnerability. You can start exploring this metabolic terrain yourself by checking out the interactive Oncometabolism GPS Shiny application described in the research. That was a truly deep dive into the metabolic architecture of cancer.